It is a par four, and the tee shot is kind of a blind shot towards a bending fairway from left to right. You're kind of looking straight at out of bounds if you throw it too straight. It's a very fair gap off the tee. You're kind of throwing from a little guarded area, but it opens up pretty quick. And the whole fairway kind of slightly slopes from left to right as well. A lot of players will choose a forehand just to get it in play. If you go backhand, it's a more aggressive play. You can get way further down the fairway to actually maybe even see the basket on your second shot. But usually second shot looks like a big turnover or big sidearm into a very blind and guarded green by hanging branches. The OB wraps around the left side the entire way. The right side is thick jungle. There's a creek on the right side that's probably also all OB once you get deep in there. And that is basically the hole. If you look towards the left, you'll see some taller grass, and the gallery lines up around the left side of this hole. The green, anything long will slide into the bushes. This hole is in the first third of the course.
Is it hole four at Sprinkle Valley?
Hole four at Sprinkle Valley. No, it is not. What is hole four?
There's river on the right. There's OB if you go straight. Left or right sloping fairway.
Oh, no. This is a very grassy fairway.
Okay.
It is a park setting. Let's see. From the tee pad right behind you is a lake.
A lake.
Throw over on the previous hole.
Ooh.
And the hole after this hole is...
Oh, wait. The hole after is an island hole?
Yes. And the hole before, actually. Both are island
holes. Wait, so this is six at Des Moines?
Yeah.
Yes.
I've never played Des Moines.
What?
Six at Des Moines. That's
Wait,
so
you've never played Des Moines?
I've never played Des Moines.
Oh, can we restart?
Joey can have a point.
Yeah, I'm happy. I got it.
Wait, I was so certain you played Des Moines.
It's my fault for not playing Des Moines. So I don't deserve a point.
Well, after this all happened this time. Before once.
No, that's when I did a hole we had already done.
Well, Paul did one
did
in
hole
Europe.
I never played.
Oh, yeah.
And Milo.
Paul in Europe. When Paul did his, he did a hole in Europe at Croco, and you've never played Croco.
I've never played Croco. Well, I'm sorry. I was so certain Eagles played Des Moines. Why have you never played Des Moines?
Because it's always been in the middle of the year where I've gone to Europe, or I've been hurt, or I just didn't want to go.
Are you going this year?
99% chance.
Well, that's pretty high percent then.
Are you going to stay with us?
No.
You ever going to park?
I have a friend in Des Moines that used to live in Colorado. Shout out Clay Smith. I am going to be staying with him and his family.
Shout out Clay Smith.
Wow. Well, I really like that course, I think.
No, it's a course that I've always wanted to play, and it's about time.
And it's a course that has a really good group of stewards, Ty Tenant, the TD, also the head of the pro shop for the Disc Golf Pro Tour, as well as Schlebach and Gannon Burr. They got a good group of guys down there who really maintain the course, but also try to kind of tweak it and add to it. Simon, you've played it over the years, and they've changed a lot of the stuff. Have you enjoyed what they've changed, or do you miss the old Pickard?
No, I think it's one of the places that finds ways to improve every year. So they listen to the players and the feedback, and they just do what
the best kind of events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I think it's really instrumental that Gannon and Ty have really kind of spent the last 10 years in disc golf together. And I think that, you know, Gannon is, in my opinion, a good voice for how things can change. I don't think he has like too aggressive of a mindset around what course design should be. So I think that the two of them are really important in that property. And while it is going to be a tight week, because we're ripping over to Norway, at least I am, I'm still very excited to go down to Indianola.
Wait, so Krogol is the week after, or direct?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Or PCS.
Yeah, sorry, PCS. Yeah. PCS is the next week.
Oh, okay.
But if you're a European, like if you're like Silva Saarinen or Kristin Lett, you have Konopiste, Ale, then you flew here with no off week, right to the preserve, then tonight, because today's Sunday of the preserve, you're going to drive 6 hours to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Then you have 3 days to practice for a four-round major. And then on that Sunday, you're going to drive to wherever the nearest big airport is and fly to the west coast of Norway to practice for another major. Well, not major, but I would say that for the European Championship is a major for them. Like, it feels that significant.
Totally.
So it is not as hectic for me as it is for them. And I'm grateful for that, especially even next week. I'm just kind of hanging out and being a support system and getting content. So I think I could have it a lot worse.
Welcome to Crush Pepper, episode 19.
Woo-woo.
That was a good intro.
That was great. We want to, first of all, just extend our thanks to our listeners and just a, I don't know about an apology. We have busy lives. Things happen. It's the middle of the season. I honestly didn't expect the weekly releases to survive unscathed through 10 months of touring around the world. But I'm glad that we got to get an episode in here. And
right now it's every other week. Yeah. That's the schedule.
Right now it's when we can do them.
It's when we can do them, but it's been pretty consistent with every other week, and it's looking like next week it's going to continue to be that way because we have a busy next week. I have a wedding that I'm going to. Simon has his little Rugrats that he has to go tend to back home, and Joey, he's going to be supporting the Joey women. Support Network.
I'm going to be supporting women's disc golf out on Lake Michigan. Eagle, I think you have the most interesting set of plans next week. Can you give us a little tidbit?
A little taste, if
yes,
you will?
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm going tropical. I'm going to Hawaii to go to my good friend's wedding. I and Corey, shout out.
They're getting married?
They're getting married.
In Hawaii?
In Hawaii.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, huge shout out to
Corey's actually from Iowa and I is from Japan. So Hawaii is kind of like the perfect middle ground for both of their families to meet up. Plus I is actually lived in Hawaii before. So it's going to be really cool. I've been to Hawaii a long time ago, 2 times actually, but I've never been to Oahu, which is the island that I am going to. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. It's going to be just vacation. I'm actually going to be playing some disc golf out there because Corey is a big disc golfer and the courses in Colorado aren't very good. So he's very excited to play some different courses. And on Oahu, it actually looks like there's some pretty cool courses that I'll probably check out. I'm going to have my full disc golf bag with me because we'll get into it a little bit more later in the episode. But I had quite the week last week. And I'm flying tomorrow morning. We're recording this episode on the final day of the Preserve Championship presented by Simon Line. And the next day, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., I'm flying all the way into the rock in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, Hawaii.
Shout out I and Corey.
They're the GOAT. They're the best.
I got to spend 4 or 5 days with them at the Portland, I guess it might have been Beaver State Fling at that point.
It was BSF,
but we were there for 2 weeks back-to-back and just really enjoyed getting to meet. I mean, I know that Eagles friends are always going to be cool people, but it's nice to meet them in person and have that confirmed. So shout out to them. Let's go back a little bit just to briefly catch ourselves back up.
There's a lot.
Yeah, so our last episode that we recorded was some morning of the Northwest Disc Golf Championships.
Yes, it was.
Is it before round two? It was
before round two. We were in the basement with the pool table.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful,
that was a sweet Airbnb.
It was a beautiful day.
That feels like a life ago.
I mean, for me, it was almost 2,500 miles of driving ago.
Yeah.
So let's just quickly talk about the end of the Northwest Disc Golf Championships. I just want to hear your guys' conclusions on the event.
Was the putt right? Should the putt have stuck?
That's a great question. What do you think?
I think it's a 50-50. It's the kind of putt that if it stays in, everyone kind of goes, oh. But in this instance, it was just a little bit too right, and it wasn't AB's day, which is unfortunate. But, you know, it stinks. It stinks, but it's how the cookie crumbles. It's like my putt at Portland Open in 2019, kind of.
No, that putt was...
It toilet bowled around the whole basket. If it's a millimeter more towards the pole, then it's in. And it's the same thing with AB.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, everyone looks at the putt now, of course, and says that's what lost AB the tournament, which might be true, but... To even end up on that hole with a par putt like that is, you've made a lot of errors leading up to that.
No, I mean, he did not play that hole well. I mean, bad drive. His second shot, he hit the first tree in front of him. This third shot, he almost threw it out of bounds, and he was kind of lucky to, like, scoot back inbounds. And then his fourth shot was, I mean, on the broadcast, they called it fluffed. I mean, it was good enough to get to that putt. So I don't think it was. I think of the shots on the hole, it was the best shot that he threw on the hole was his fourth shot. The reason why I think it should have stuck is the same argument that I give for baskets having heavier chains, which is that, like, you want to see the tournament go on. You don't want to see it end that way. And I think that potentially there's baskets out there that don't push that, and there's a world where we go into a really epic playoff.
But there's also some baskets that are literally skinnier, and he airballs the putt on.
I will say
if he's putting on a Mach 7,
I think if he's putting on an MVP basket, it doesn't catch because of, I mean, it's too right.
That right side is almost always weak.
Yeah.
Unless it's higher than it sticks.
Mm-hmm. And he said it too. I mean, he was, I gotta say, like, that's the first thing. I mean, obviously congrats to Gannon, but the way Anthony handled that entire situation, 10 minutes later, he was out signing autographs. And the post that he made, he said he overcommitted to the putt. I mean, he didn't leave anything up to a debate. He kind of put that all to rest. He said that it was on his skill. And I mean, and I think, you know, that's also coming from someone who knows that he's going to have dozens and dozens and dozens of those chances going forward. And if he lets this become a big fat deal, he's probably only making it more difficult for him to succeed in those future moments. So I have a lot of respect for Anthony for the way he handled it.
Totally. But it does sting.
It does sting. Mm-hmm. It's a very...
He's going to remember that one forever.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I could not believe he missed it. I got to play with him when he shot 12 under on the same course where it just looked like he was untouchable. That was kind of crazy. I don't think I've ever felt so... What's the right word? I felt like I was lacking in comparison to him in every single category that day, which I don't think I've ever felt before. It was crazy. I was shocked. I was already at the airport when he missed that putt, and I couldn't believe it. I was kind of ready to watch a playoff, and then I was just dropping off my bags, and it was just over just like that. And Gannon sneaks another one like that. Oh, unbelievable.
Northwest Disc Golf Championship / Portland Open. It always gives a crazy finish.
Yep. The finish that was not crazy, however, Holland Hanley. Domination. So we just got to give a big shout out to Simon Lizotte for a fantastic draft pick.
Oh, I take no credit.
Do you guys want to give us 10 seconds each on that tournament for yourselves?
10 seconds?
Or a brief?
I can do it in 10 seconds, easy.
Okay, let's do 10 seconds. You can go.
Played okay. Got lucky down the stretch again, finished in 6th, I think. And that's basically it. Good enough.
I played good for 2.5 of the rounds, and the 1.5 wasn't very good. And I missed a putt similar to AB on the final hole to finish one stroke outside top 10. So I was not happy.
Your putt was significantly longer than AB's, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that putt was, to AB's credit, that putt literally felt impossible over there. Elevated basket with like a headwind blowing.
Yeah.
Just like the worst putt you could leave yourself with, to be honest.
Well,
10 seconds. Give us your 10 seconds of Northwest Disc Golf Championships.
My 10 seconds was that I went full send on content at the Northwest Disc Golf Championships. I was a 1085 rated filmmaker. I filmed so many in the bag, so many interviews, practice rounds. We went all out. It was a beautiful spot. The weather was great. All teammates were there and we crushed it. I feel like there's going to be a lot of good content coming out on the MVP YouTube channel, supporting our players. And I was really proud of the amount of effort I put in. The off week was pretty
eventful
for you.
Yes.
So you want to?
Yeah, I guess I can open up with maybe make this into a segment, honestly, where we kind of go over some tour horror stories, if you will. Tour stories.
Tour horror.
Stories. So after Portland Open, my intention was to take my time, go the northern route to Minnesota, which takes me through eastern Washington, northern Idaho, Montana, North Dakota. It would have been great to execute that because I would have gotten to go to Yellowstone, across North Dakota off the list of states I've never been to.
Really?
Well, I'd never been to North Dakota. Huh. I actually never been to Montana either, but I did go to Montana. But I was making my way through Montana, very beautiful, kind of heading towards Bozeman area, which I was going to drop down and go to Yellowstone. There's this cool website called findaspring.org, and you can find like really cool drinking water or hot springs, both developed and undeveloped. So I was driving on I-90, and right off the road, there's this warm spring called Nimrod Hot Springs, probably 30 minutes outside of Missoula. Really stoked to go to it. It looked incredible, like crystal blue water, and it was just what I wanted to do that day. But it was a little weird because you had to pull off to this frontage road, and this road had like zero maintenance, super bumpy, driving down the road, and it kind of just feels a little sketchy. And you had to park at the end of this road and then walk parallel to the interstate to go to this hot spring. So I decide, you know what, this doesn't feel quite right. I saw some cars parked on the side of the freeway going the other direction back towards Missoula. And I figured, okay, that's where you probably park. So I'm going to head back to there and then go to the hot spring. Driving back down the road, I hit a pothole, and for some reason, there's like this mangled piece of plastic that probably came off someone's car with this giant like S-hook in the bumper. I didn't see it. I roll over it, and then all of a sudden, I hear like the worst possible sound on the front side driver tire. Immediately, I see my tire pressure monitoring system just go to zero. Complete blowout on my tire. Like, it is so gone. And
do you have a picture?
I have a picture of the guy, the roadside assistance guy changing my tire. So luckily, I have, shout out Progressive. I have free roadside assistance. He came and got me taken care of, but put my full-size spare tire on, and I'm just trying to think, like, what do I do now? I'm trying to get to, like, either Butte or Bozeman to see if I can get a tire, because I have 37,000 miles on the current pair of tires, that the one that just blew out. And all-wheel drive, if you didn't know, you need to get your all four replaced if something like that happens, in most cases, because if not, it can, like, mess with the mechanical aspect of the all-wheel drive system if you decide to drive on, you know, maybe one new tire or the full-size spare. So just talking to the tire mechanics in Bozeman, and they're saying, like, yeah, you're going to need new tires, and we're not going to be able to get the tires you need until either Monday or Tuesday, and it's Friday at this point. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this really stinks, and I'm not really supposed to drive around. So, like, all fun kind of went out the window, in all honesty. I had a tough decision to make. I saw that home was 9 hours away, and I asked the tire guys, like, can I drive back home to Colorado on this tire? And they said, you could probably get away with it, because I have a great mechanic. Shout out Julio Martinez. He's actually known Colton Montgomery forever, who works at a Ford dealership where I got my van. And I call him up. He's like, yeah, come back home. We'll get you all taken care of. The tires will be here and on time. The tires will be here on time, and, you know, we'll get you taken care of. So I drive all the way back home. And I was planning to drive out to Minnesota after I got the tires serviced, get everything taken care of, spend some time at home. That was great. And then just decide, like, you know what? I really don't feel like driving 13 and a half hours to Minnesota. So I book a flight, Airbnb, get here on Thursday. It's pouring rain, and I wanted to get a practice round at the preserve. It was my intention to, but it was so bad, the weather, that I just decided, you know what? I'm not going to play a practice round. And here we are. That's kind of a horror story, but you know, that's part of being a road warrior.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're glad that you're here. Definitely some crazy situations, but you know, when we did our, whatever it was, the 10 fundamental pillars of being a touring disc golfer, you know, we were describing this exact kind of situation, hypothetically, that might happen to you. And you're going to have to pivot on the fly.
I knew this was going to happen, like, the start of this year. I just knew. I've never had a flat tire like this before. Mm-hmm. And it was just destined to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Totally meant to happen.
Have you had a tire blowout on you ever?
Yeah. Actually, when I got my new car, which I still have that same car, within like a week or two, I hit a pothole and the tire completely exploded on me.
How loud is that noise?
I mean, hitting a pothole is already loud, and the little pop of the tire, I don't think it really added that much, but yeah, it was just ripped. The whole tire was just ripped. I was not happy, and I had my wife and my son in the car, and then we were just stranded there for a while.
Shout out Massachusetts roads, baby.
In yeah, some of them.
Bumpy.
We don't have the greatest weather system, so the roads suffer.
Well, and in Massachusetts, in that whole part of the country, those, if you go way back, those roads were like trails and like, I mean, event at the beginning, they were walking trails, and then they were like horse trails, and then they were like maybe like carriage trails. So every time I drive out on the East Coast, you have to remember that the entire road system was not made before the car was invented. When you go out west, you can tell that everything, all the infrastructure, was created post the invention of the car because of the grid that everything exists mm-hmm. in. But you go to the East Coast, and it's like, wait a minute.
European America.
Mm-hmm. 100%. The only other thing that happened last week in the disc golf world was the second Elite Series over in Europe at the Ale Disc Golf Center in Nol, Sweden. On the MPO side, we had Niklas Anttila shooting a 10 under to win by one over Ricky Wysocki for his third Elite Series win of the season.
God, racking them up.
And on the FPO side, we had quite a moment. Our teammate Silva Saarinen got the monkey off her back. She beat Kristen Lett in the final round. They were both right there coming down the stretch, and she handled the nerves and she prevailed. And you could see how much it meant to her. She was very emotional at the end. You can tell that she appreciates having somebody like Kristen who pushes her so much. But I know how tough it's been on her the last two seasons, not being able to finish the job when in theory you should have been able to finish the job. And speaking of finishing the job, we are recording this podcast in the middle of the final round of the FPO Preserve Championship. And can you guess who's duking it out right now at the top?
Yeah, Silva and Kristen battling. Silva just took a stroke on Kristen in the last hole. I'm watching. Yeah, fun to watch. That was cool. I think they teed off at 4 a.m. or something for Massachusetts time.
Mm-hmm.
And because I have little kids at home, I get up pretty early. So I actually got to watch the back nine. And it was cool to watch. The weather was terrible. And I wonder if that played a role in the results there. Kind of felt like Kristen was a bit... I don't know, just her body language seemed like the weather was getting to her a bit, and she like didn't find the fire it would take to like come on top on another battle like that. So, yeah.
And that is no different this week. We have dealt with weather. I really do want to flip this now towards you, Simon, because this week has a lot to do with you. This is your event. You get to now kind of show everybody the few little tweaks that you were able to make. It's not obviously the same as like, you know, you debuting a brand new course that nobody's ever seen before, but it still has your fingerprints on it. There's definitely a lot that feels different about the event from the previous years. Now, I speak as somebody who hasn't been to the Preserve Championship since 2021. So this is my first time here in 4 years. So maybe
says
it's
the
been
Minnesota
changing.
Man himself.
Hey, I've just been going to Europe early so many times. That's been way too fun. But this feels like the first Preserve Championship in a while. I felt like it used to be associated with just like triple digit temperatures, like super humid, like borderline heat stroke.
Yeah, that's what I expect.
Has it been cold in recent years, or was it hot last year as well?
I think it's always been kind of hot here.
So this is the first year that it's been like moderate. What's
going on with the weather this year?
Yes.
The wind, there's so much rain. I mean, the course looks beautiful. Like, I don't think I've ever seen it this green and lush.
Totally agree.
Yeah, usually it's like the trees are turning yellow.
All the grass looks like a prairie.
A couple years ago, yeah, it looked like a desert out there. So yeah, no, I didn't pack according to what was hitting us this week. With it's been in the 50s basically for the last 3 days.
It's been freezing.
Today's gonna be the nicest day, and we'll creep above 72 at the in the late afternoon hours.
Unbelievable.
Like, serious question, like, moving forward, is anybody going to be able to compete with like Northern European disc golfers, because they're just used to playing in bad weather all the time?
And Minnesotans. That's and why Minnesota? I'm happy to be a Minnesota disc golfer, because I saw the day one conditions out at the Preserve, and yeah, they were bad, but I played around at the Preserve, at the haunting at the Preserve in 2020 with Casey White. Our tee off temperature, 34 degrees. The winds were a consistent 40 mile an hour with gusts up to 55, sometimes 60 miles an hour. I laid up every single putt outside of 15 feet, as did Casey White. The entire field, this is on the Timberwolf. For those who don't know, the Preserve has three unique 18-hole courses that get combined into one super layout. The Timberwolf is the largest of the three unique courses. That was the course we were playing.
Is it bigger than Black Bear?
No. But it has most of the holes on the Timberwolf are Black Bear holes. Like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then like 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. That's all Timberwolf. And so two players shot under par that day. Kale Laviska also told me that he laid up every single putt outside of 20 feet, and he shot 6 down, which the previous day was rated like 980. It was 100 points higher. It was like 1085 rated. Casey shot even. It was like 1040. It was unbelievable. I had never seen conditions like that. So I do think we're a little accustomed to the crap. And I want to ask you guys both mentally, because I heard a really interesting quote from a very famous golfer, Jack Nicklaus, the Golden Bear, 5-time Masters champion. And he said that his favorite tournament rounds to play were the bad weather rounds, because he could wake up in the morning, look out the window, and immediately count out 70% of the field, because they would be so mentally upset by the conditions that he could use it as an advantage. And he said that he played better in tournaments with bad weather than he did in tournaments with good weather compared to the field.
I don't share that mentality at all.
It's a great mentality, but let's just say that I need to strive to be like Jack Nicklaus.
For me personally, I think I would rather play a mediocre round in beautiful weather than a great round in horrible weather. It's just so much more fun to be out there and just enjoying everything 10 times more.
No, I need to work on this, but I was literally cursing out the weather the first day. I was like, how do we play every tournament and the weather is bad? Like, no matter what. Like, even in Portland, which was probably some of the better weather of the year, it was still bad.
Yeah.
Like, the only tournament we played with, like, legitimately good weather this year has been Florida.
Yeah. Everything else has been just windy and cold, kind of.
Wow.
I mean, California wasn't bad.
Champions Cup was okay.
I mean, it was so windy. Yeah. Other than round one, it was like,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. No, and I think that's why Jack Nicklaus was such a great champion, right? Because, like, he didn't care about having fun. He didn't care about any of it. He only cared about kicking the crap out of everybody else he was playing. And so anything he could use to his advantage, he was going to. But also, like you said, you also, I think, have to be a little bit genetically predisposed to having that mindset. And that's the reason why he was so good, is because he had that mindset, and like so many other people find it so difficult, including myself.
I used to feel that way about the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we used to play in Texas all the time, I was like, oh, the windier it's going to be, the better. And for some reason, I lost that.
I mean, I think if you guys would be like, you know, going up in the season, maybe you're like 5 or 6 back going into the final day, I'm sure you'd pray for something bad, because you need a little bit.
There's definitely
there will be moments, but I mean, obviously not at the start of the tournament. But we had a really fun week so far here. I guess this is the last day in St. Cloud, the Granite City. We got up to a lot of cool stuff. We got a Polaroid camera. It was a total joke. I went to, as those of you know, in Cascade Challenge, I went to Denver for a day, and they had one of the young staff people on my dad's nonprofit wanted to do the viral trend of giving the old guy, my dad, a Polaroid with like 16 photos to take during the convention and then use it for social media. And my dad thought it was the stupidest thing ever. He's like, what am I supposed to do with this? He's like, I'm about to retire. I don't want to be some social media trend. And so, but he took a few, and then he gave me the Polaroid, and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I just took it back and I brought it up here as a joke, totally as a joke. And I think Simon kind of ran with it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
They have just like some vintage style to them, and we hung up like maybe 15 photos on our fridge here at the Airbnb, and then it became like a thing.
And so then yesterday,
took silly photos and named them even sillier names. And now we have a whole photo album, and we'll do it for the rest of the season. And at the end, that's going to be legendary.
No, I agree 100%. Like, we are now to a spot where we're so into using it, like, we are going to create awesome pictures and memories. So shout out to my dad for
Mikey
giving me that camera. It's been sweet. We have gone to a very cool disc golf store, saw some very old discs. We've played a lot of board games here. Actually, we've become quite a board game
and
house.
I lose every single time. Actually, I've won one game.
Yep.
Miserable.
But we've been playing ever since Harry brought Seven Wonders to Champions Cup. I feel like that's when it started.
Yeah, that was clutch.
That was clutch. And I think that the way our group travels is so unique and so special. We spend so much time together all the time. And I have traveled with other groups, and it is not like that. And so I'm very grateful that we have Polaroids and darts and board games to kind of bring us all together in the evenings. And I mean, this week we have not been like getting our fill of fun enough, apparently, because we're up until 1:30 every night playing some game, keeping Eagle awake, dropping darts over his head on the floor.
Yep.
Did we wake you up last night?
I've been fine. Ratana has been not sleeping well.
I'm sorry, Ratana. But the match play was on Thursday. You got to play Calvin in the rain, and you won. Did that feel nice?
I forgot about that. Just another miserable day on the course. Calvin definitely kind of didn't play well, and I played okay.
Yeah.
Felt nice. I don't know. This whole match play thing seems a bit odd. I don't really get why they incorporated that. But
I mean, it's
yes,
for
like
the
I
final. It's purely for the November event.
I know, but which pro is like excited about to go play an event in November when everything's said and done and you're finally getting home
and
over the long season?
Cut the off season.
See,
short.
I don't think they care if the pros are excited or not. They care about the fans being excited, and they know that the pros will go, and if the big ones don't, somebody else will come in and fill those shoes.
All I want to say is they don't really care about us.
They should care about us because, it translates.
They care about us.
It translates to the rounds. Mm-hmm. Like if I watch a Paul and Ricky battle, which happened at Cascade for the match play, which it should be like a legendary freaking battle, but you can just watching that, you could like see like they didn't care.
They were just there because they had to be.
Exactly, and I don't know.
I think we're also at a spot, too, where we have a lot of players, but the big names at the top, like the top 15 MPO, or maybe just the top 10, I think a lot gets asked of them, like way more than a lot of other top athletes. I think that it's very concentrated from the Pro Tour's end. Like asking stuff of you and Calvin and Paul and Ricky. There's just like 10 guys whose lives are twice as busy because of those obligations. And, you know, it's press conferences, it's skins matches, it's, title sponsoring events, it's match play. I mean, anybody outside the top 20 doesn't really have to deal with any of that. So
there's like a pretty
concentrated group of guys.
Yes, and there's a lot of people looking and wishing that they could do all that stuff too.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's a privileged position.
In other sports, I think it's a bit more spread out.
Totally.
Because there's a much larger group of kind of elite players. So I think the Pro Tour, in my opinion, needs to do a better job of trying to market some of these up-and-coming players and their brands instead of just like quadrupling down on guys like Simon and Ricky and Paul, who we already see a ton. And I just think like it's less on the fan side and more on your side. Like I would rather give you half of the responsibilities in order to see you less burned out, and give the half that I take away from you, give it to somebody like Evan Smith, or give it to somebody like Sullivan Tipton, who is like a fantastic player who is coming up. I mean, like, shouldn't we be trying to like usher in a new generation of big stars instead of just oversaturating all the top guys who have been there for the last decade?
I've been anti-feature card forever, basically. I think it's one of the most unfair things in sports, in any sport. Like, The fact that the same 10 guys in rotation are on the lead feature cards every Frink tournament is like, it makes no sense.
And the same goes for the All-Star Media Day.
You should have one feature card. There should be two feature cards, but one should be the final one, which is like event choice, sponsor choice, past champion. That's a good feature card because it makes sense. But the next one should be just showcasing, like there should be some formula to put like in rotation the whole field. So everybody gets a chance to play in front of a camera who has like a tour card or whatnot.
Sure. And I mean, you could make the devil's argument there of like, well, just go shred and you'll get a camera on you. Right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day...
Well, you can still shred and not have a camera.
Sure, but at the end of the day, every single one of these players in the field, like, in theory, if they went out and just balled out, they would get a camera on them. So you can play your way into the spotlight. I just think that the Pro Tour could do a better job of opening those doors.
They just want easy eyes.
Yeah.
I mean...
They know what people want to watch.
It's true.
But people want to watch good disc golf, and a lot of these players are capable of good disc golf. I mean, Harry Chase.
They just want the safe picks.
I mean, you think people wouldn't want to watch Harry Chase go 7 down through 11 yesterday? I think they would have.
I would love to watch
that. I would have loved to have watched that. Harry Chase is a fantastic player.
I agree, but would you also want to see, sorry, Paul, but like Paul going like 3 up through 12?
Would I?
I would.
There's a lot of people who like to see that as well. They love to see me go 10 up through 18.
Yeah. I think that there is a world where we can help promote a bit
more.
No,
totally. I think we need to work towards that direction.
Yep. 100%. A little bit backwards here, just quickly, I'm going to just talk about the fantasy points updates because we have had 2 events since we last talked.
Oh boy.
And
how many am I behind by?
Well, a little. So in third place, we have Eagle McMahon at 4,720.18. So you didn't gain any points at all, eh? Because of the players you have on your team. Nobody was there. But Eagles team, holy cow, you crushed us at the Northwest Disc Golf Championships again.
Really?
The last 2 American events, Cascade Challenge and Northwest Disc Golf Championships, you have whooped me and Simon. You got 200 more points than both of us at the Northwest Disc Golf Championships. Which, is that because of Gannon?
Gannon was, what did Paul get? Was Paul top 10?
He might have been, yeah.
My FPO probably did well because Paige Pierce did pretty good. I think Owen probably did good. And I don't even know who the... is it Cat Merch?
Cat Merch.
Okay.
So you are in third right now with 4,720 points. Simon is in second place at 4,928. And Joey T expanding his lead at 5,477.68.
Oh, putting the hammer down.
That's a 500-point lead.
Let's see who's carrying these teams. Yeah, you're right. Gannon Burr is carrying your team, Eagle, but...
Shocker.
Owen Scoggins and Paige Pierce. Owen Scoggins is a clear second place here. And then you've got Kat, Paige Pierce, and Paul McBeth that are all around 750 points. If we look over at Simon's here... Holland Handley and Ricky Wysocki are leading the charge. Holland Handley, I mean, she has more fantasy points than anybody on tour right now with 1,198. Unbelievable. And then if we look over at my team, Missy has absolutely picked it up. I doubted her a bit, and she actually told that to me. I saw her at the first round. I was caddying for Silva this week, and I just, like, said, like, dude, it's, like, freaking sweet seeing you taking down these events. Like, you're carrying my team. And she was just like, yeah, but that's not what you were saying at the beginning of the season. I remember when you talked to me in Texas, and you told me to pick it up. And I was like, yeah, and look what happened. You picked it up. She goes, are you taking credit for my wins?
Sounds like you're taking credit for her wins, Joey.
I mean, who's to say?
Me.
The butterfly caused the hurricane.
That's right.
You are totally a butterfly.
So anyway, fantasy that's our wrap on fantasy. We'll see in 2 weeks at Des Moines how it looks after the next two tournaments, which will be this one concluding today, and then a FPO only tournament next week.
What else is new?
I can talk about one thing that happened to me when I was home.
Yes.
I think I told Joey this story. I almost got attacked by a deer.
Yes.
Ooh.
This is a good story.
So I was going on a little walk at a place that I have done plenty of walks over my lifetime, Walden Ponds. Just wanted to clear my head, go out there, beautiful little nature preserve. I was out there picking wild asparagus and had a little bundle in my hand, walking down the path, and I see a white-tailed deer, which is actually, I don't think I've ever seen a white-tailed deer in Boulder before. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's kind of crazy to see one there. But I figured a deer, you know, I'm going to keep walking towards it. It's gonna flee. I'm walking towards it. I probably get to like 50 feet of the deer. It starts walking towards me. I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. And it keeps walking towards me. And I'm like, okay, I stop. It keeps walking towards me. And then I turn the other way. I'm walking away. Keeps walking towards me. I start running. It starts running at me. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, am I really in this situation? Does it want my asparagus? It probably wanted my asparagus. And I remember, like, what you're supposed to do if an animal is pursuing you is you got to hold your ground, make yourself look big, put your arms over your head, and, like, start making loud noises. And that's what I did. And I'm, like, screaming, going, and the deer is just standing there, and it finally spooks. And then immediately after, I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, I did some research, and it's very rare that deer are aggressive. And I don't know if it was aggressive, because it wasn't, like, sprinting at me. It was, like, it kind of looked like an innocent little gallop. But when I started running away, and then it was running after me, I was like, what?
Maybe it was just excited. It was like, oh, there's something to chase.
Maybe.
What was your animal that you were impersonating? What were you trying to be?
It sounded like a deer.
Sound like a bear.
I don't know.
Can we get that noise again? There we go.
That's what deer sound like, no? I thought so.
Maybe an elk. I don't know. That was it was kind of a wild experience. I asked
Elk
Chat,
McMahon?
I was watching, or not watching, asking ChatGPT, like, what could be the case? And usually they're protective if they have their fawns with them, and it seemed like it was a female deer, a doe, if you will. And but I didn't see any little Bambis following her. And the other one was some like disease, like rabies, which didn't seem that aggressive, but I got out of there. I'm okay.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
that's scary. I don't mess with wildlife.
Have you had any wildlife encounters like that ever?
No, only with a dog. That doesn't count as wildlife, though.
I mean,
it doesn't count as wildlife.
I was traumatized. I was assaulted by a dog
when
I was
gosh.
A child.
Really?
I think that sparked my eternal fear of dogs a bit.
I do remember when you first, like when I first brought Sadie out, I was like, I mean, she was the sweetest dog ever, but I could still like, I could sense just like, there was like an initial sort of like, ooh, dog.
Yeah, I definitely lack trust in every single dog I've ever seen, basically.
I've had one wildlife encounter in Yellowstone National Park with my family.
Hey, where I was supposed to go.
Yeah, we did it out and back at Mammoth Hot Springs. And on our way back, our trail was covered with like 35 full-grown elk. We came around the corner and bang, right into a herd of elk. So we like turned around and went back up and hid behind a tree and they eventually moved on. And then the only other standoff I've ever had was on a cliffside walking trail in the rice paddy region of southern China. And I had a standoff with a rooster.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah, I was just like trying to go exploring and just like walking around, and I came around this bend and he was just right there, like in the middle, and he was like, he was aggressive, dude. He was not even standing still. He was coming after me. And I did the same thing as you. But I decided to go for the dog noise. So I just kind of got big and just barked at this thing. And then it like eventually jumped off the path and I ran by. But I suppose you went for Elk McMahon. That was your noise of choice.
Elk McMahon.
Or some sort of gorilla.
Gorilla?
Gorilla.
A silverback.
Or a bear. McMahon does mean son of the bear, if you did not know.
Son of the bear?
Yeah. I am Eagle, son of the bear.
That has to be the name of the episode.
Eagle, son of the bear?
Or just son of the bear.
Son of a bear.
I remember one face-off I've had was a huge boa constrictor in Australia. I was at a zoo or like some kind of petting place where you like meet kangaroos and stuff, and they brought out this huge snake. Like how long do these things get? Like 20, 30 feet? Like insane. I am terrified of snakes. Like, I don't mess with snakes at all, like most people probably. But I was like, damn, this might be a once-in-a-lifetime thing where you can hold, like, this giant snake around your neck. So they, like, kind of handed it from person to person to put it around your neck. And, like, I don't think I was built for it. My heart was probably beating faster than you should. And you know how they say, like, animals can, like, sense when you're nervous. No. And they can probably feel the heartbeat and stuff. And the snake was just around my neck, and like the head just started turning towards my face, like staring me down. And I was just like, I don't like this. Just trying to like pull the snake away a bit, but the snake just kept closer to my face. And yeah, that is for sure the only time I will ever touch a snake in my life. Nothing ended up happening, but whoever trained the snake that was watching like just quickly kind of took the snake away from me, I think. I was not comfortable enough to handle a snake in that moment.
I had the snake necklace at some friend's birthday party once, and I remember being equally intimidated.
I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the snake likes it either, so why do it?
I'm always so scared I can't even picture what the snake might be thinking at that moment. I always picture them laughing at how scared I am.
It has to come down to just a gene that you have, like Jake Hebenheimer. Earlier this year, I swear that when we were at Olympus, I was climbing up the hill to hole 18, and I was like grabbing roots to hold my weight to pull myself up the hill, and I almost grabbed what is it, a copperhead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, I almost fell backwards down the hill. I played with Jake Hebenheimer the first round. I told him, like, you know what? I was going up this hill and I almost grabbed what I thought to be a copperhead. He's like, oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. He's like jealous. He wants to have that experience. And it just like, I can't even fathom grabbing a snake.
Did you guys ever, or do you remember Jake Hebenheimer's saga from last year?
Oh, of course.
When he lost the snake in his car?
That's like a nightmare story.
And then he's like, has that video where he's like, well, I found the snake. And he's like driving like this. And then he pans down and the snake's head's just out under his seat. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's ridiculous. He's like, and I feel like some of it's genetics, but some of it is experience too. Like,
yeah.
You just grow up around it. Because mm-hmm. Calvin Heinberg is the same way. I mean, I remember when I stayed at Calvin's house. And I think I said this on a different episode. I've stayed at his house 3 times. And this year was the first time I built up the courage to catch one of those little lizards, the anoles, mm-hmm. which are harmless. But right when I'm like, and I would get to the spot where all I had to do is just jab out my arm. And I'm just like sitting there, like somehow hoping that it's just going to walk into my hand. And I had to eventually like really overcome that of just like, you have to be aggressive. And when I watch Calvin, he just runs after him and just boom, picks him up. And then he'll put him on his ear because they'll hold onto your ear like this.
I can't relate. I can't even go fishing because I'm like scared to touch a fish when I catch it.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I think I'd feel the same way.
I remember when you held those trout in Tahoe when you caught them.
Oh, I didn't have to actually hold them. I had like a log holding them.
Yeah, yeah. No, but they
and they were already dead, so that's different.
They gave you one like on there, and you were like, dinner. But I remember when Spanky like showed you how to hold it under. He like dropped it under your hand.
We got some good sound bites.
Would you ever go noodling?
I don't know what noodling is.
It's catching a catfish with your arm. It's like,
oh, I've seen that in the mud.
You just you go along like the the river shore, and you're literally going underneath, and the catfish just grabs your arm, and you grab it by its gill. Sounds absolutely terrifying. You have this monster just on your arm.
I have not heard of that specifically. I have seen plenty of videos of people who like just jump off a dock and like come out with a fish. Like, people are nuts.
One thing I would like to do in Hawaii is spearfishing. It looks really cool.
Can you name the state fish of Hawaii? Because I can.
Is that the humu humu?
Humu humu nuku nuku apua'a.
Yeah, I've been to Hawaii. I had to learn that. I'll never forget.
I've been to Hawaii twice and I had no idea. Maybe it's because I was vegan. I didn't care about fish at that point in my life.
It's a very silly looking fish.
You're going to get to see some really unique disc golf baskets, I'm pretty sure. I know Ray Jordan, the owner of BRP, he spends a lot of time playing out there. I think in Maui specifically.
Maui, yeah, it's like tire baskets.
Yeah, the tire baskets.
I played that course. You have the Buddha Hole. Legendary course. I forget the name of the course, but yeah, we'll definitely like to get back out there at some point.
So Maui. We're here at the end of the Preserve Championships. How has the event been, just from like a not even, doesn't have to be playing perspective, just how has it been? I mean, for me, it's been amazing. This is always an overwhelming event for me. I already have plenty of people to talk to at every Pro Tour event, and this week is extra because my whole community is here. I'm really impressed with how many people have come out each of the last 2 days in spite of the bad weather. Or despite, somebody corrected me on that. It's not in spite of, it's despite the bad weather. And I think it's great. I think it shows the strength of the Twin Cities disc golf community, which I think is the second best metro area community for disc golf in the world behind Charlotte. And I'm just really proud of how Minnesota has shown out. I'm proud that our sponsor and Simon stepped in to help this event continue to happen. I think it would have been really difficult without a title sponsor, or at least without MVP like saying yes when they did. We have the world's largest rubber duck out here. It just seems like the event, despite the weather, has gone on quite well. I want to know what you guys have felt the last 2 days.
Putting us on the spot.
Well, it's pretty easy for me to put a lot of positivity. I'm not playing, so I don't have emotions connected to scorecards.
Yeah, it was a hectic warm-up week. It's always kind of tough when you look ahead and you see the weather for the entire weekend. It just looks like complete garbage. So I did the MVP practice round, then I did skins the same day. Was really sore afterwards and the next day, and then I had to do the match play the next day. Had to do also a TV interview like spontaneously as well, and then of course I was on top of that doing all the vlogging that we're doing for my channel, and then all the tension with all the banners and signs out there with Simon Line. I think each T sign, we counted 4 Simon Line logos on each T sign, and it's just a lot of attention and things in other people's faces where I'm not sure I'm like the most comfortable with that.
Mess with you the first day?
Yeah, probably. I mean, a lot of things probably are a bit subconscious where you're like stressed out and you don't really feel it, but it's definitely there. Yeah, I don't know if I'm like really the type of person who likes all that.
It's a lot.
Attention.
Does it feel more than Maple Hill even?
Yeah, I have nothing to do with Maple Hill, really.
Right, but you're the hometown, like, pseudo-hometown boy.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd's definitely on my side there, but
it feels different here.
Yeah, yeah. Here, cool. I almost feel like an imposter here a bit, because I don't have anything to do with Minnesota or the Preserve, really. So, I don't know, the whole thing just feels a bit random to me. But still fun. I mean, I'm glad we did it. It's been an experience. And I think today's going to be pretty epic. I expect a lot of people out there today. The duck is
cool.
Everyone's talking about the duck, which that's a Charlie idea, of course, who is the TD here. And owner now of the preserve.
Yeah, he's just the owner because Odie's the TD.
Oh, Odie's the TD. Okay.
Yep. Well, and so he owns the lease, basically. So it was two years ago. So Kale was leasing the land, and then Charlie took over the lease. And, I mean, we owe a lot of thanks to Charlie, and we owe it a lot of thanks to MVP and you. And, I mean, you know, brutally honest, it takes money to run this property. It takes money to lease this property, and it takes a lot of money to title sponsor an event. And MVP does not have to title sponsor events. They don't need to do it. And they are doing it because basically, you know, we've lost a lot of title sponsors from the last season. And if you don't have title sponsors for your events, it makes it really difficult to tour. And when you're a company that has an entire touring team, it would be beneficial to have a tour for that team to compete on. And so I just, you know, want to say big thanks to the people at MVP and to Simon for, like you said, although it's a bit random, I think now it isn't. Now it's here. It's happened. And the next year it's not going to feel random. And I think, like, it was a great starting point, and everybody loves watching you out here. And I think you've had a lot of success at this course, and I think that adds to it. And I did specifically actually want to ask you about something, because something happened with your disc golf bag this weekend, and it just kind of highlights something that a lot of disc golf players have to go through, especially the pros on tour, which is when a disc that you trust stops doing what you trust it to do, how and when and, like, how do you go about making that decision and making that switch? And I'm specifically referring to your Orange Volt, which just stopped behaving like it was supposed to. And I just want to know, like, the process you go through with that.
I mean, over the years, I've become pretty ruthless when it comes to my discs. I have more or less zero attachment to any of my discs. I mean, just looking back at California, I threw, like, my absolute money dimension on the stupidest Simon line ever in the middle of a pond. And my cat, Dustin, was just like, I can't believe you just did that with, like, your favorite disc. But, no, that's just kind of how I've always been. But I'm definitely getting more and more just kind of, like, not really caring over the years. I just, like, yeah, sometimes it takes one shot where the disc doesn't do what I think it will do. And I know I'm never going to throw that disc again. So I just hand it straight to someone watching or throw it in the trash, basically, because I have no more use for it. Once the trust is lost, there is no second chance for me. Like, why would I ever throw it again if I don't fully trust it?
A switch flips in your head. It's like, you just can't, you don't want to even go near that disc anymore. You can't even handle it.
So then my question would be, what kept that orange Tesla in the bag for so long?
Well, the orange Tesla was a special disc. I mean, that went through multiple stages. That was a disc I've had in the bag, I think,
since the beginning,
a year. Which is really rare for me to have a disc in the bag for more than, like, 6 months, honestly.
It felt like the next version of your PD a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. That disc was weird. It was just different. It was kind of like a one of one the way it came out of the machine. So those will always be a bit more special, I guess. And I threw a lot of phenomenal shots with it. I still trusted it until the end. If I didn't trust it, I would have never thrown it anymore.
Where is it now?
That disc is somewhere in my basement, I believe.
Okay.
It'll get a spot on the wall, probably.
Yeah. So this week it was the Orange Volt. And it just...
And my hex.
And your hex.
Yeah. Hex flipped on me twice. Once in round one, but I kind of let that one slide because it was really windy and it was rainy. And, like, we all didn't really know what we were doing except for Gannon. Corey Ellis, shout out. Those are pretty good rounds in those conditions.
Seriously.
But then, no, yesterday I threw it on hole 11, the kind of the island hole par 3, the signature hole of the course, probably. and I loved it out of my hand, and it just flipped right over and sailed OB right. No wind, no anything. It was just complete betrayal, mm-hmm. I felt. And yes, I'm almost sitting right next to it, right next to the path where it was laying on the path, OB. And I just picked up the disc and handed it right to that person and said, here, I have no more use for this. And my bag is hexless right now for the first time since I've joined MVP.
Wow.
I didn't bring a backup, and I'm going to have to improvise in round three today. I might throw more proxy or try to finesse my detour a bit more, because this is going to be my first hexless round ever in 2 years.
And is this like, because I think a lot of people would be thinking right now, like, well, come on, like, Simon could go get a hex if he wanted to get a hex.
Oh yeah, I could definitely easily.
And so what's like the, but it's just like, you don't know it. You wouldn't know how it flies right away. I mean, you could throw it once in a field.
Yeah.
But for you, is it just easier to just stick with the stuff you already know than try to, like, put something new in for one round, basically?
I don't know. I just have this weird feeling. I just want to go hexless.
Okay. Today. There you go. And you know what? Like, disc golf is such a, like, confident, mental-based game that, I mean, when we look at shots on the course, when you have multiple shots and your gut tells you something, I just think you should listen to it, because so much of this sport at the top is the difference between that and not listening to it and doing what you think you're supposed to do. I mean, if Garrett Gerthy or Corey Ellis in 2022 had thrown backhand upshots at Portland or Maple Hill, who knows what would have been different about that season for you? I feel like that 2022 Portland Open where Garrett threw his upshot out of bounds, I feel like he was throwing the shot he thought he should throw instead of the shot that he had executed the entire round with confidence. But he was like, I should throw a forehand because that's what would happen here. And that's the same with you right now, where it's like society would say you should go get a new hex. But if your gut says like no, then you're going to play better going with your gut, in my opinion.
Well, we shall see.
Well, it's an hour and 7 minutes. Should we do emails or should we be done? Let's do one.
One or two. Show the email people some love.
Show the email people some love.
I want to do an episode with all emails.
Okay.
That sounds fun.
It's a good off-season one.
By the way, today, I think, the new hole 10, the par 4, I am going to throw a roller on the second shot today.
Just like the practice round?
Just like the practice round. Maybe yesterday, I was so tempted to do it, and I kind of feel like it's my shot. Like, I feel like it's almost unmissable.
And that's the thing. It's just what we just talked about. Like, it's just if you feel it in your gut, then, like, as a talented disc golfer, you can execute any shot. So why wouldn't you go with the shot that you're feeling in the moment?
Because like, that shot, if it doesn't work, it's going to look so dumb. And that's, I guess, what was holding me back yesterday. Also, Dustin hated it, so.
But if you execute it, it's going to be the funnest highlight ever.
Yeah, but I don't even want to do it because of the attention it'll get and people being like, oh my god, what a weird Simon line. I just think it's the shot for me.
Okay,
that's why I
want to
do
it. That's a good topic to bring up.
What?
It's like throwing the shot that you know you should, but not throwing it because you don't want the attention. Like, I feel that way on certain holes. Like, I literally go with the shot that everyone else throws just because I don't want to be the black sheep and stand out, because if I do it bad, then I look really stupid.
Yeah.
So that's why you're not throwing forehand roller on two?
Exactly.
Okay, here's our question. This question is a classic would you rather. So buckle up your shorts, Joey. It's going to be spicy. This is for Eagle. Eagle McMahon, would you rather miss every circle two putt automatically for an entire season, meaning if you approach a basket anywhere in circle two, you cannot make it, or kiss Simon gently on the lips for 4 seconds just once?
Wow, that is tough.
Does it boost my inside the circle percentage, or does it just go back to normal?
Let's say it boosts it.
No, let's say it goes back to normal.
Oh, it sounds like somebody doesn't want a smooch.
Wow. Buckle up your shorts, Joey.
What's your circle 2 percentage? Usually 30?
Probably, yeah.
Okay, so let's say that if you kiss Simon, you get 40% circle 2 for the season. Guaranteed. Or zero.
What's the right answer?
There's an obvious answer. I'm taking the 40%. Are you kidding me?
You're giving the smooch.
Yeah, I want 40% C2.
I won't be offended with any answer, Eagle.
I got
okay.
Toothpaste lined up. I can brush my teeth and my lips and my body.
Do I have to brush my teeth and my lips?
Preferably.
Okay.
I'll do option 2.
Well, thank you.
I need all the strokes I can get.
Thank you to Darren Robinson for that amazing end to our episode. What's our name of our podcast?
Buckle up your shorts, Joey.
What was the other
it
one?
It wanted my asparagus.
It wanted... Was it Son of Bear?
Or Elk McMahon is good, too.
I like Elk McMahon.
Elk McMahon.
Or what was it? Son of a Bear? Eagle Son of Bear?
I like It Wanted My Asparagus.
Okay.
All right. It Wanted My Asparagus, episode 19, in the books.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks in the great state of Iowa.
Iowa. Smell you later, guys.
Bye.
Smelly.